All right, so the eminent domain battle in the upper Midwest continuing to heat up against South Dakota, North Dakota, basically putting the kibosh on the Summit pipeline. Iowa, where our governor has been pretty much bought and paid for by the owner of the company, who also, not coincidentally, is, I think, one of the biggest donors to the Republican Party here in our state. You've got a lot of tension in the Republican Party. I mean, the Democrats continue to be really stupid. I mean, when it came to voting on an eminent domain bill in the Iowa House, most of the no votes against passing eminent domain legislation were from Democrats. No, there's a fellow named Glade. I didn't catch his first name. He's quoted in an article saying, quote, "I hate to break it to the senators, but the senators in the Iowa Senate running the bill, but we are making eminent domain an election issue. If you're on the wrong side, we will do everything in our power to remove you from office." That is not a partisan remark. This landowner, like so many others in this state, are really upset about what's going on, regardless of political party. Because there certainly are Democrats who've been making, you know, strong statements about how wrong the eminent domain is for this purpose. And there are some Republicans making equally strong and sometimes even stronger remarks. So, there's no voter alignment saying, okay, I'm going to switch parties. It's just a matter of candidate by candidate. We'll see how it goes. It might affect the governor's race. There's a five-way primary on the Republican side for governor. And I think this is going to be probably the top issue in that campaign. So big change on this, though. The company now, realizing it can't go north, wants to go west. It wants to bury the CO2 in Wyoming. And it has also said that it will use it for enhanced oil recovery. At first, it was saying, nah, we're not going to do that. Now it's saying it will. Now it wants to go to Wyoming, meaning it's going to go through Nebraska. I got news for you. Nebraska is going to fight so hard on this, you'll wish you never thought about going to Wyoming. I mean, those folks are so feisty and so seasoned and so effective. Anyway, I think this thing is probably not going to happen. Again, resistance in this case starting in South Dakota, spreading to North Dakota. And I think there's been enough resistance in Iowa where you are seeing this. Now, there are now 12 counties that are no longer included in the proposal. We'll see what happens. One other thing I want to talk about relevant to agriculture is the Iran war. So, and this is true of farmers across the country, but again, I'll talk about Iowa farmers here for a sec. Iowa farmers are, many of them are trying to adapt to what they feel is the declining farm economy. You know, farming, the pressures to farm, whether it's crops or livestock, have been, you know, growing worse every year. It's been going on for a while now. And now you've got double-digit increases in fertilizer prices due to the Iran war and what's happening with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. As bad as it is for Iowa farmers, I mean, and I'd love to hear from people listening to this program elsewhere in the country, how this is affecting farmers in your area, because my impression is that there are, you know, at least in Iowa, there's some insulation. When you're a big crop farmer, for example, corn, beans, some insulation from price increases because you know, you buy early. You buy your fertilizer, you know, well before the season starts. You buy some of your other inputs, you know, well in advance. Now, not everybody has done that. An analysis of the latest USDA Iowa production cost report compared to the last report before February 28th of this year, again, when the Iran war began, it shows that nitrogen fertilizer costs increased from 27% to 62%. And again, depending on the product. And meanwhile, phosphate fertilizer increased by 3.6% and potash rose 2.5%. So these are significant changes. You know, and one hope I have is that farmers will find a way to accept slightly lower yields. They won't be using as much nitrogen fertilizer because they can't afford it. And maybe they'll get lower yields, but overall they'll make more money. But the whole system is not set up to really benefit the farmer. And let's be clear about that. we get a several conversations for the entire program about this, but there, you know, it used to be that you could expect a safety line, a safety net rather, from the federal government. But now, you know, you've got incentives, continued incentives to get big. I mean, get big or get out. Earl Butz back in what, 1950, 60? And that's still at play. And we've seen that happen. We've seen, you know, farms get bigger and bigger. And when that happens, more and more risk. You know, and conversely, we've seen more and more small farms begin to operate. Again, and this is, I believe, happening all over the country. More and more small farms are beginning to find markets for local production, for actual food. The growth of farmers markets around the country is incredible. And Des Moines has a great one. There are cities and small towns that have very vibrant farmers markets, and those are critical. Those are insulated from the impact on agriculture of something like a war in Iran. How do we begin to craft an approach to farm policy that respects the larger operators that are providing, you know, a service that we need, without tanking the mid-range operators? You know, we got a ways to go to do that, folks.